Blog okay. Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to the latest episode of Wait, What Are We Talking About? This is Christoph, your faithful host on our weekly excursions into whatever we're talking about that week. Both Phoebe and Nicodemus were unable to make it tonight. In their stead, I have Dale, who's a longtime cohort of mine. We're going to talk a little bit about state of movies in 2018. He's got a few he wants to talk about. I've got a few I want to talk about. And here in a second, we're going to rip into Movie Pass and leave them a bloody carcass on the theater room floor. Briefly, yeah. I do want to note that Peter Tork of the Monkees died today. He was 77, I believe. They were one of my favorite bands when I was younger, so that one kind of hit me right in the middle of the chest to read about. I almost cried when I saw that today. I legitimately almost cried.
Hey, music lovers everywhere probably did, because he really did contribute to that band and to pop culture in general just by his personality and his music styles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He has a great bassist.
I can't remember the name of it, but he had another music project that he'd been working on for a long time, too. And I read that one of the reasons he didn't actually sing a lot is because his voice just – they didn't consider his voice suitable for a lot of the material they did, but he also did some of the more novelty song type stuff the Monkees did, like Antique Zelda.
Right.
I remember that one.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know,
yeah,
and then there's one he did on their 1986, I think, album Pool It, which was when three of them got together without Michael Nesmith. And Peter had one of my favorite songs on that one. You know, something like, you know, when all the dog came home. And basically, this whole song's about how everything started going right again after she left. Kind of a country song in reverse, except that it wasn't an actual country genre, but, you know, it was Monkees pop, and it was exactly the kind of silly thing that Peter Tork would do, and it's kind of, that's the reason I like Peter Tork, man. You seem like the goofiest, nicest of the Monkees.
Okay. Well, he did help, he contributed a lot with George Harrison and doing, and you know, kind of contemporary of his, and I think that's kind of where I kind of caught on to him, was post-Monkees. And hearing all about the project they did, especially when Wonderwall came out, and he kind of had a lot to do with that.
See, I didn't know anything about that. Like, I guess the Monkees was my connection with him. I remember when Channel 38, which is, you know, one of the you know this station, one of the independent stations here in anyway. I remember the day they came on the air, because I knew there was a station coming, so I would check Channel 38 like every day. And one afternoon I turned it on and 38 was there, and there was a show coming on called The Monkees. I'd never seen it. Actually, in my head, I thought Monkees. I was expecting animals. Nope, it was a band.
Yeah.
I loved it. So,
well, you know,
I
saw the music videos growing up too. Yeah. Everyone has a different in on his music.
But you know what? The coolest thing the Monkees ever did, honestly, the coolest thing they ever did was the movie Head.
Yes. You know,
that is everything the rest of their TV show wasn't, because that was their career suicide movie. That was like, we're tired of being this you know, flat bubblegum manufactured garbage, so we're going to do this. And so they said, here, see what you make of this. And of course, Bob Raffleson directed it, the guy that made Five Easy Pieces. It was co-written by Jack Nicholson.
Right.
And it is a head trip. All right.
Well, I mean, psychedelic is the least amount of praise you can give it. It was way ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah, it still is. I mean, it's even by today's standards, you couldn't put that in the mainstream theater today. That's still, I mean, like, leave it to the Monkees to do like a legitimate surrealist art house piece.
Yeah,
of all people,
and
Beatles. Yeah, go.
I was gonna say, you know, by the end of the '60s. Especially when it came to that avant-garde hippie movement, you had people doing things that really kind of carried over into the next decade, that really just had people kind of scratching their heads and going, what? Huh? You know, what is this? I kind of like it, most of the musicians in the '60s kind of walked up to the edge of the cliff and said, do we jump off and see what happens, or they go back? And a lot of them went back and said, just, you know, let's just do it over again in the '70s. But the Monkees, to some extent, the Beatles and a few others just kind of jumped off that edge and said, where we go is where we go.
Yeah, and nobody would have expected the Monkees to be one of those bands. That's what's so great about it. Nobody would have expected them to go down
Right.
the
They were rabbit hole.
But again,
so
that
to speak.
was that was
Sure.
what was so great about it. They were like, we are aggressively refusing to be the band that the studio has always made us be. So now we're doing this, and like you said, they ended up making this fantastic, milestone of 60s counterculture filmmaking. And it was, there was a lot of satire in there. I mean, so much of that movie was just, knives in the back of popular entertainment industry.
Well, and I also kind of correlate that a lot with where Monty Python came out of. I mean, a lot of people look at them as kind of like the de facto 70s comedy troupe. But a lot of you watch their earliest stuff. I'm surprised the BBC even let them put that on the air in the first place, just because it was so almost out there as far as, not necessarily music like the Monkees did, but taking the visual art down that road of going off the deep end.
Oh,
and
I know.
How far can we push this genre? We're doing satire and we're making fun of people, but we're also making commentary on what's going on in the world. So
absurd.
That's why I kind of see that kind of went.
The ending of Holy Grail was just jaw dropping the first time I saw it, because it was so just narratively defiant. I mean, that's something you expect out of any other genre but comedy.
Well, I mean, and I showed the Holy Grail to I showed it to my kids, and it got to the end, and just the credits started rolling, and they're like, "That's it," And to a 15-year-old kid now, they're kind of going, "Huh?" But I remember the first time I watched, I just wanted to stand up and cheer. I was like, "That's perfect." They didn't need to do anything else. They got it. It was a perfect ending to a movie that was completely off the rails from the get go.
Right.
From the opening credits when they were going nuts with those,
Yeah. Yep. All right. We've already managed to go past the Monkees and into Monty Python. That's a great segue. But I want to, before we jump into movies of 2018 specific titles, you mentioned MoviePass earlier. I'd forgotten all about. Like, that's going to get the worst thing of 2018 movie wise. Not a movie. MoviePass is, because that was such a debacle. I enjoyed MoviePass there for a while, but I watched movies all the time, and then they kept closing in with these restrictions, and finally it was like, it's not even worth it. It's not even worth it to maintain the account.
Right. And I was in on the beginning. I know MoviePass had been around since 2012, but it wasn't until about 2017 that we saw that unlimited, I don't know if you had the unlimited package where you would pay $10 a month, one movie a day, and unlimited, you could watch 30 movies in a month. I mean, so I was constantly watching movies in the theater for, a good 6 months.
And
then
no limits was a new release or
right. Yep. The spring of 2018 is when they started kind of futzing around with. They changed it to you could see three premiere movies a month, and then you had to scan your stub in, and then they changed that even down to they blacked out all new movies and 3D movies, and you had to pay extra fees for opening night movies. And about June, I said, I'm done. Yeah, exactly. I mentioned before,
too good to be true.
Well, exactly. I mean, someone who sold me an idea was like, and you could buy the year pass, which would be $7 a month for unlimited, one movie a day. That was insane. I mean, the fact that some movies cost $10 now to get in to see, even the opening night one, that was for families or people who don't want to drop $10 per ticket. That's a lot of movies that you could see. And it just kind of went down the drain.
Yeah. it was nice, but I mean, it was destined to collapse under its own weight, because everyone found out what a great deal it was. And then when everybody was doing it, it didn't work anymore.
And it didn't work anymore. I mentioned VidAngel was another kind of same boat. It started off as one of those, you could bleep out swearing or sex scenes or in particular things you didn't like in a movie. But what it really what really got the attention of the movie people was I could watch first run movies online for $1.
Legally.
And that's what legally, because they got sued, and they were kind of trying to cover it up by hey, you're editing the movie and you're changing the foreign movie that was the smoke screen. But the reality of the situation was that people were getting to see movies for $1. and not paying full price on the $4.99,
Right, and
$6.99
your standard
downloads from
corporate
Google Play or
greed that
Apple.
runs Hollywood. Right,
Yes.
your standard corporate greed that runs Hollywood was not satisfied with that because it's never a matter of we're not making it, or we're not making enough money. It's not we're not making as much as we want to make. It's like you're making a lot of money. Like you can really
Oh man, just
stop anytime.
well, the last Jurassic Park movie after all the box office returns was $1.3 billion with a B, and it wasn't even really the best movie in the franchise, to be honest. I
It
think
was meh.
it was a
It
good
was
one.
meh.
It was a meh. It was a
It was a
meh
good
movie.
idea before we executed, I think.
Right, and it almost fits our honorable mention category. We'll talk about later. But I was just, that main movie made over $1 billion, and movies that I thought should have gotten a lot more attention and more money didn't even come close to that kind of money. But that's what drives Hollywood. That's
Yeah.
what makes the other movies.
All right. Well, tell me, crack your list out and tell me some of your best stuff. I want to see what you got.
All right, so I made in no particular order for 2018. This is my list, and I'll just run through it without saying anything about it. Just run from top to bottom. A Quiet Place,
Okay.
Hereditary, Incredibles 2, Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse, A Star Is Born, Avengers: Infinity Wars, the sixth Mission Impossible movie is a Mission Impossible Fallout. Green Book, Annihilation, and then I had tied with Black Panther and Black Klansman because they were both start with the word black, and that was kind of my top 10, and it's some of
Yours
them are
actually
the
were.
mainstream. I have more superhero movies than I
Yes.
really want to.
I'm
That's my top.
your list overlaps heavily with mine, and I'm going to ask you back over that in a minute. But like,
Sure.
Hereditary is on my list. I thought Hereditary was
Yes.
an excellent. I like it's a return to what they were doing in the 70s, the quiet intellectual horror film, stuff like The Omen and The Exorcist. It was intelligent horror. And that movie
Yeah,
works so well.
and visually was one of the more stunning movies of 2018, especially the cinematography on that was just incredible.
Well, plus, and there was depth to it. The characters were actually real characters. Like, one thing that made that such a disturbing film to me, it wouldn't have been disturbing if it hadn't been for the family dynamics. Like, the scene with the daughter when the son's driving,
Yes.
that is disturbing, not
That
because.
the
Whew, yeah.
gore.
Well, it wasn't
But
that, but
I
that's not what made it disturbing. What made it disturbing was the emotion, what the boy was going through in his head. That's what chilled me to the bone. And
Yes.
if they hadn't had real, three-dimensional flesh characters with a real family dynamic that you're watching disintegrate, that would not have had the impact. That is what fueled the horror in that movie. That's why it's such a good horror film, because it's got real depth, and it's not a genre that gets that kind of attention a lot.
Well, especially last year, because and that's why I brought out A Quiet Place. I love John Krasinski anyway,
Another good
but
one. Oh, yeah,
where
definitely.
lack of dialogue, which I thought would hurt the movie, didn't hurt it one bit. It made it worse on the nerves. It was more of a suspense movie than it was a horror film, and I really kind of give him credit and saying, hey, here's a guy who was an actor, he was on The Office, he was doing other things, and now he's doing, he's directing and writing. Hey, it doesn't hurt that his wife is Emily Blunt, of course, but he knocked it out of the park his first
Yeah,
directorial debut,
he's
and
a talented
it really
guy.
deserves probably a lot more credit than he probably gets. But when you put them
Well,
both in kind of
I
the
haven't heard
horror
anything negative about the
category,
movie. Everyone that's brought that movie up
it
that
just.
I've talked to has loved it.
Well, and I think they're making a sequel, and just like, and we can talk
They
about
are.
sequels later. But it's just
Right.
I liked Emily Blunt's performance probably more in that than I did the Mary Poppins Returns movie, which goes into my dishonorable mentions category, or what did I
Really?
call it, the because I liked the movie and
Interesting.
I had a lot of I love you know I'm a huge Disney fan and love musicals, but I felt that they were reaching for the stars on that one and did not quite grasp everything they could have gotten with the Mary Poppins reboots, or I guess sequel,
Gotcha.
if you want to call it
Too
that.
ambitious.
But
Too
anyway,
ambitious.
right, and if you look at all the movies I talked about, even Green Book, while it was kind of more of a happy feely, let's approach race from a
But
different
I want to see that.
perspective.
That's
Yeah,
one of the ones
if
I
you
have
haven't seen
not
Green Book
seen.
yet. Yeah,
That's one of the ones I have not seen that I think might be on my list if I saw it, which is why I haven't done a list, because there's a few gaps of movies I need to see. That's one of
well,
them.
Viggo Mortensen's the lead actor in that, and I really do think he's one of my favorite actors anyway. And
He's
he's just
great.
great when he's great when he's holding a sword. He's great when he's riding a horse. He's great when he's driving a car. You know, that's kind of what he did in the Green Book. But you know, if you want to switch gears for as far as genres now, Annihilation. Well, I'm not a huge fan of really weird sci-fi that makes you just kind of go, huh, at the end. I
Oh, see,
did
I
sit
am.
after. Yeah, it's kind of like where do you go from there when you have a movie that like Annihilation that changes your whole twist. I mean, it has special effects and everything great, but I don't put it on the level of the Matrix. I walked out of the Matrix with my head completely blown, but I walked out of the Annihilation kind of thinking more than I would have thought after watching Padmé run around in the weird world with all the special effects. You know, that's what I wanted to see, but.
That movie still walks up behind me and taps me on the shoulder from time to time. I'm going to end up having to buy a copy because it's going to become one I have to watch. And I'll say this,
Yes.
most of the people that didn't like Annihilation, because that divided people, most people that didn't like it were people that had read the novel. And it did make a number of
Yeah.
substantial changes from the novel. I read the book. The book was great. But I'm okay with this. This is one of those cases, sort of like The Shining, where I just simply regard, or the entire James Bond franchise, with the exception of Casino Royale, where I can sit, and I'm talking about the Craig one, not the dumb parody
Yeah.
from the 60s,
Right.
where I regard the books and the movies as entirely separate entities. And I'm also okay. I understand that a different creator is going to reinterpret things. Do you think the stories that Homer told were in their original form? No, they were not. They were codified when he wrote them down. It's like there are things in the Bible that there's a lot of oral tradition that fueled them until they were written down, and whatever form they were when they were written down, it froze in that form. You know,
Right,
same thing with
and that's
Homer, and
why I
same
think,
thing with art generally.
well, in general, more the moviescape is our new mythology. It's some people said in the 20th century it was comic books. I think now it's moved on to movies, and you get that 2 hour or so window of looking into someone's story and someone's myth and someone's plot and construction. And even that's why I think Annihilation did so well this year, is because it's one of those you can go back and revisit multiple times and go, huh, like Invictus
Especially
or
if you're like
like
me.
who watches
Well,
more,
see,
the movie more than once. Exactly.
this falls perfectly in the category of like the kind of sci-fi you generally don't like. This goes in there with movies like 2001, which 2001 makes perfect
Yes.
sense to me. I could explain that movie lucidly to someone that didn't get it. It's just the last part of the movie is told. It's almost told for autistics because it's told entirely in pictures, you know? Because, you know, Temple
Well,
of
and that's
Grandin
why I think
talk about how she processed things in
yes.
pictures and not in words.
Well, that's why I think a Quiet Place works so well, because of it was is so image heavy and not a lot of the dialogue that was there was good, but you know, when he I'm spoiling people, spoiler alert, when he dies, that whole sequence could have been a very gory and messy thing, but because it's done from the perspective of the deaf girl in the car and being attacked, and then you don't see it. It's so poignant, and it means that his sacrifice means so much more. That's why I think, you know,
Right,
when I
well,
look
and
at when I can go ahead, sorry.
no, don't finish.
I was going to say that's why when you compare my list of A Quiet Place and Hereditary to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, you have this heavy, thought-provoking entertainment, and then you have the popcorn stuff that just makes you kind of go, wow, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Well, we're both eclectics that way. We can handle some really weird, trippy stuff, and we can also have just some complete fun. Because I mean, my little list I'm looking at here is the same way. Briefly, I mentioned that there's some I haven't seen. I want to. I'm gonna go ahead and mention those while I'm at it. One of those is, I guarantee you will be on my list when I see it. Now that I say that, I probably hyped it up too much, and it's gonna make me mad or something. The Favourite, the newest movie by
Oh,
Yorgos
yes.
Lanthimos. He is one of my favorite filmmakers. I love The Killing of a Sacred Deer. It was my number one film for 2017.
No,
Brilliant
and
film.
he, his all his stuff is awesome. You know, he has
The
a.
Lobster, Dogtooth. Yeah, he's great.
Well, I just briefly to talk about that Spider-Man. The reason why I liked this version of it so much is because it took us out of the grind of Peter Parker gets his powers, he learns how to use them, he meets a big bad guy, and we've done that, what, five times now? Six? I don't remember how many times over the years. And it feels like we've kind of come around full circle. And
Homecoming was
and
the
while
sixth
I like
Spider-Man movie and the first good one.
Well, I mean, while the current Tom Holland version is great, and I'm looking forward to the next episode, next version, not next installment.
See, this is one I have not seen yet, and I want to see.
It's partly because I'm not going to spoil it for you, because it's got so many different. What happens is that Spider-Man gets kind of flung into like a different, like alternate dimensions of Spider-Man, and so you have different
versions.
I figured
it was
There's
something
one of
like
the
that.
Pig, the pig,
yeah,
the young
was the
black
movie's framework
kid,
for being meta.
Well,
Peter Porker.
And what's my favorite?
Spider-Ham.
Peter Porker, yeah. And the one that my favorite was the Peter the Spider-Man that's in a noir series where everything is black and white and shadows and they nailed it as far as that genre goes, and that's why I think when I look at the other Black Panther and Avengers, both of them had the same aspects of doing something new and keeping that the series going, and while Black Panther did. It had its own little, up and down detractors and people who liked it and didn't like it. Avengers Infinity War had my 15-year-old daughter sitting next to me bawling when Peter falls apart. She was so affected by that I kind of went, are we watching a superhero movie? That's where it kind of went. And I have like 2 decades of Marvel comics in the back of my mind going, where are they taking the storyline? Okay, they didn't do that one. But they did,
I have an
so
idea.
I have this. Yeah. What's that?
I'm not going to say
you know where
idea,
you're going.
I have an idea. I have an idea where Endgame is going. I have an idea where they're going to how this is going to be wrapped up. I have an idea, and I'm curious. Avengers Infinity War. I hate to say this. This like makes me turn to a hipster for a second. I'm mad at myself for saying this. But my favorite movie of last year was Avengers Infinity War. I saw it 3 times in the theater.
Oh wow! And I have the DVD. The Blu-ray, and I've been watching the pausing and
so
going
good.
Back and looking at people's face. And I'll give you the secret hidden gem, I think, in Infinity War this year, this last year, was the fact that they had Doctor Strange in it, and the fact that Benedict Cumberbatch is such a good actor. When he says certain things, you have to go back and watch it the fifth time, and you go, oh, he's smirking there. He knows exactly what he's doing. This is that there's so many levels of what's going on, that's why it just kind of takes it out of the realm of just a regular superhero movie. Black Panther had that too, but that just kind of led into Infinity War, and that's why I think the next two or three movies are going to be incredible, like Captain Marvel and Endgame.
Well,
but I'm curious.
One of
I'm
the
curious though to see.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No. Please.
I was going to say.
You're curious to see what?
We haven't Pixar rebooted Incredibles 2, and that's why I'm kind of curious about the next Toy Story movie, because I thought they wrapped up that series so well. How can they – can you squeeze any more blood from that turnip? I don't know if you can.
See, I've not seen all the Toy Story movies. I've never been that fond of the franchise.
Well, I wasn't until I watched the last one, and I kind of went
– Well, you have kids, too.
Darn it, Pixar, you're making me cry at a stupid animated movie again. I'm not
ashamed
at that. I mean, they did with Up, and they did a couple other movies.
I think I like Infinity War. While we're still kind of on that, it's got one of my favorite screen films, Thanos, Josh Brolin. That is one of my favorite screen films. I mean, he's up there with like Darth Vader and Samuel Jackson's character and Jackie Brown for my favorite screen films. He's up there. He's up there with Ratchet. But what makes him so compelling is that you can kind of understand his motivation.
Well, I mean, there's in the comic books, there's this great little like one line off that throws everyone off. It's when someone says, "Well, what's he trying to do? He's trying to kill off half the universe so we can, so everyone can live." And Vision goes, "Well, it makes a certain kind of logic," and everyone looks at him kind of crazy, like, "Are you serious?" And he's like, "Hey, I didn't say it wasn't barbaric, you know," and that's why I think what the MCU has kind of done, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Has taken us to a point where if you haven't watched all 15 films or however many they're up to now, 17, I don't know how many you can count them all.
A bunch.
You miss out on a couple of those inside jokes and the depth of, you know, Tony Stark's character and how far Cap will go when he wants to do things, and you know, those things you kind of lose it. And I mean, because it's easy just to say, well, why did they just, you know, call in the American military and blow the crap out of these guys, or why did they just do this? Well, if they had those options to open to them, they would. But you can second guess that plot.
Well,
as far
it's
as
called
you can push
suspicious
it,
disbelief. You're a comic book movie, you know. Come on.
Right, and that's why, you know, that's why on my list, when I put A Star Is Born, I will give those filmmakers credit for showing the only. I guess I'm giving away, this isn't our spoiler alert. They're giving away a suicide scene at the end by not showing it, but they showed it, but they didn't. And it was
nice
at a level of, you knew it was coming, you knew where he was going with it, but it didn't throw it in your face, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I want to see that movie. I love Bradley Cooper. I love Lady Gaga, and I want to see what he does as a director. So that's one of the ones I haven't seen that I know is going to pile on my list.
Oh, and if you like music at all, that's, I think,
oh, yeah.
While I think Mary Poppins had probably nailed the musical category for this year, I do think that A Star Is Born, she lets her pipes fly in this thing. You can hear, I mean, you heard it probably on the radio in the last year just because of the, you know, crossover. But
yes.
She lets some singing pipes open up, and you kind of, and without the filter of her persona in front of it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes. When she's on stage, she's playing Lady Gaga kind of, well, I hate to say that because I mean, it's kind of her personality. It's just the outrageous side of her personality, but this, she's actually playing another character. So she's
the more
not being
flamboyant.
Lady Gaga.
Yes. Well, and
right.
That's why I think Bradley Cooper shines at helping her push that. And you know, it's the story, I guess, but
Bradley Cooper's so cool.
He's he's the old mentor showing the new person how to do it. And that's why when you look at my list of that kind of covers all of my top 10, but I wanted to throw another one at you that you probably haven't seen yet. Did you see Eighth Grade?
That was the Bo Burnham film.
Yes.
That was the Bo Burnham movie. It was not bad. I was surprised it got ranked as high as it did. I thought it was pretty good. I didn't respond to it as strongly as a lot of people seem to, but I thought it was a good movie. It really kind of came out of left field. It's like, that's a Bo Burnham movie. It's kind of like, I haven't seen it yet, but it's kind of like that, you know, Jonah Hill coming out of left field in mid-90s. It's just like, well, that's odd. Okay.
Right. Well, it was, I think it was like a true commentary on the state of the way that media and kids are using the media in the last, say, 10 years. The fact that anybody with, as we've talked, can become a broadcast station and do their own channel doing it every day and from their bedroom.
Like we're
doing
right now.
Ah, yeah. We could all be wearing pajamas right now. But
yeah.
See,
I'm not
going to
say what I'm wearing, Dale.
No,
not that kind of phone call.
I have one shoe on. There you go. Well, that leads me to my honorable mention list, which I will put Solo firmly at the top of that. We've had this conversation on Facebook. I like the movie. I think they did a really great job at checking all the boxes of doing the pre-story of Han Solo and Chewbacca. I walked out of the movie theater kind of going, that was awesome. But it wasn't as good as Rogue One. It wasn't as good as Force Awakens. It was kind of in the second tier of good Star Wars movies. And kind of, yeah, Last Jedi.
I love Last Jedi.
That's a totally different episode. Yeah, it was great. And I think that's why I walked out of Aquaman the same way. I kind of went,
oh,
it was good.
I liked Aquaman.
Aquaman was great. It had a lot of, I mean, I love Jason Momoa anyway. Ever since his Stargate Atlantis days.
Yeah, he was no Justice League, but it was still a good movie.
exactly. Well, then again, speaking of the DC universe, I mean, I'm looking forward to the next Wonder Woman movie for sure, because I think that's...
Wonder Woman
when they announced... 1984, that's correct. When they announced Gal Gadot as being the Wonder Woman, next Wonder Woman, I had remembered her from the last, well, not the next to last, but the next to last Fast and Furious movie. And I kind of went, really? That's going to be Diana, Princess Themyscira? And I kind of went, that can't be. Can't be. But then I saw her, and I was like, okay, yes, that works.
She kind of Daniel Craig'd you. You're like, no, this is ridiculous casting. Oh, wait, never mind. That works really well. You know who's the villain
and the guy
in
who...
Yeah. Who's the villain in the new
the
Wonder
villain?
Woman movie? Yes, you know who the actress is playing the villain? Kristen Wiig. Yes.
Ooh, that's a twist.
Yes.
She's been doing the quirky stuff for
right
forever.
Now. Oh, I know, but I think that's what's going to make her such a great villainess. She's going to – you just makes me think this takes me back to, like, some of the quirky villain characters in the 80s Superman franchise. You know, like, I mean, granted, she was scene-chewing, but, like, who was the villainess in Supergirl? I love that movie. I'm a diehard fan of that whole franchise. I love those. Even the silly ones, I like them.
Supergirl. Although the 1980s version.
Not the TV show. No.
The CW version.
Yeah. She's Cheetah. She plays Cheetah.
Oh, that. Trying to remember the name
of
that girl.
She's like a goddess from the lost city of Urzkatarga.
Right.
And then Chris Pine is in it, so somehow Steve Trevor's still alive.
Faye Dunaway. No, she was. That was Selena.
That might have been. I'll look that up while we're talking about this. Yeah, we're getting far. We're getting far afield from last year too on our DC
here. I'm exactly. Well, I was gonna mention. You kind of touched on the how Hollywood takes a book and adapts it to a movie. I was an incredible fan of Ready Player One. One of my favorite books of the last say 5 years. And the adaptation to the movie screen, they did quite
a
good job.
It changed a lot for no discernible reason.
They didn't put any of the Star Wars stuff in it. They took out a lot of things that are mentioned, but the main character in the book. Well, yes. I mean, that's obviously Lucas is not going
to
let Disney. Disney's not going
to
let them put Millennium Falcon in it. Yeah, but I liked it, and then Upgrade. I don't know if you saw that. That's on my
honorable mention
list as well.
That was surprisingly good.
Yeah, I mean, I kind
of
put
at least one of the Saw movies.
Yes, and so while I had that kind of the John Wickish, you know, shooting all the bad guys with one bullet.
Yes.
Feel it kind of was reminded me more about the of a video game and how weird it would be to have that happen was kind of like that feel. And of course, last on my honorable list was the two Dwayne Johnson movies I can't unravel from each other, Rampage and Skyscraper. Both came out last year. Both were good, but they were just kind of like, okay, Dwayne, you're doing a great job, keep doing it. You know,
they were entertaining. My favorite recent rock movie is Baywatch, which is actually one of my favorite films. I've seen that movie an ungodly amount of times.
I did watch that. Well, and the fact that
he's going to be Ted Bundy. Do you think I'm kidding?
I can't. I know. I saw the preview
Zac
and
Efron's
I went,
going
okay,
to be
that
Ted
actually might work. Well, and if you want to talk about meta, I mean, Ralph Wrecks the Internet or Ralph?
Yeah.
Breaks the Internet. That's it. Yes, my daughter's the sequence with all the Disney princesses and I mean, you know, anybody who's kind of sat through a Cinderella type
that's
movie and kind of went
see.
Really, just to see
yeah.
this pandering to kids to girls. Do we really? And then they really kind of nailed that.
That
and that's why
satire.
That leads me to my I was going to say that I'm a big fan of Transformers. But watching Bumblebee just kind of made me want to throw up in my mouth. I kind of went, really? Did they really go there?
It wasn't the movie's fault. I fell asleep watching Bumblebee, so I don't remember a lot of it. And it wasn't the movie's fault. I was very tired. I really, 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 really liked they used the original Transformer designs because I like the Transformers movies. I do not like the robot designs in the Transformers movies. They look like they held up an anthropomorphic magnet stick figure and just threw shards of metal at it. Here's your robot. Really?
Well,
no.
They let anime, Robotech, and Battletech a little bit too much influence into it. I'll give you that. And I think it's just
those you can see more of the machine in the robot than you can with that mess. Transformers was kind of from that very same genre from the same time period. It was kind of a ripoff of the Robotech stuff. just it
well,
wasn't
and that
machines being piloted, it was actual robots.
Right, and that's why you know, the whole anime kind of influence on the Transformers series. You kind of get that whole,
right?
Especially by the second or third one, you're going, okay, now they're marketing this overseas and not just to American audiences. But
right.
Speaking of another book adaptation movie that I put into my dishonorable category was Wrinkle in Time, because I've loved the book since
not
I was a kid. I was looking forward to the adaptation, and then I watched it and kind of went, really? Did they just social justice warrior this movie to death and make it watered down to make everybody happy, you know, because there's some pretty strong images and themes in the book, and they just kind of covered them a little bit in the movie. Maybe that has something to do with Oprah having a major part in the production, but I don't know.
I don't know. I've not seen that one. It didn't capture my interest. I don't know. I liked it when I was a kid, but the story doesn't interest me that much now as an adult.
Well, I don't know. Did you see last on my list is Searching? I don't know if you saw that. That was on
one
of those.
Is that the one with the guy hunting for his daughter?
Yes. More of a social media
commentary
movie.
That was a good movie. Yes, that was a good
movie. It's a good movie, but as I walked out, I kind of went, did I just watch someone's Facebook page for the last hour and a half?
Well, I mean,
it was kind of one of those.
It was like what was that dark web movie, Unfriended? It's kind of one of those kind of things, except not a horror film.
Yeah.
And it was an effective,
right, where you
it was effective telling of the story. And I find that kind of I like found footage and these sort of media. I like these kinds of pictures. So not only am I more forgiving of that, I actually embrace that structure.
Well, you know, I think it was. It's been about 10 years since we had a discussion about Blair Witch, but you know, I kind of feel that if you're going to meta me to dead to death, then fine. Just make it good. Don't make it so handshaky that I get sick watching it. You know what I mean?
There are
a lot
better cinema verite films than
yes,
Blair Witch. They're as above, so below. That's my favorite example of that genre. Brilliant movie.
Sure.
Blair Witch was okay, but you know, Blair Witch is more, a lot of people hadn't seen that kind of thing before. But I mean, half of Cannibal Holocaust from 1980, I think, or early 80s, it was found footage. And then it wasn't a horror film, but there was a movie, Punishment Park, I think, back in the 70s. There was a satirical political film, and it was a fake documentary. So, I mean, it's not like
fake documentaries.
New fake documentaries, found footage. You know, I kind of lump these in a vague general umbrella category. It was a new Blair Witch, just got the attention. It was brilliant marketing.
Well,
they created an urban legend
that
some people still believe, you know?
Right, and it kind of was in the early 2000s, late 90s, when social media and the internet was kind of blowing up in the world.
And people weren't savvy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, you kind of mentioned, you know, kind of more of a documentary style. And the only documentary movie this year that I actually put on my list was the one about Mr. Rogers, Won't You Be My Neighbor.
Won't You Be My Neighbor. It's on my list.
Yeah. It's.
I was close to tears.
Quite honestly, well, it's a documentary for sure. It's not making fun of him. It's not, you know, it's not saying, you know, hey, he was in a secret ninja assassin. It was just kind of just pointing out the fact that
purest form of documentary, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the new Tom Hanks biopic on him to see if it's worth anything, but... But I, after watching this, it's kind of hard to beat because, I mean, Fred Rogers does Fred Rogers, not Tom Hanks does Fred Rogers. So
yeah, but I mean, that's a different kind of thing. I also like seeing actors embody, you know, famous people well, too. That's just a different form of entertainment, you know. It's, you know.
To see that.
I'll enjoy
the
it for different reasons
their,
than documentary.
The story. Well,
yeah,
sure.
And I generally don't. Tom Hanks is a great actor. I don't generally like the movies that he picks to be in. I want to see this, though.
Right.
I almost got to the point, if Tom Hanks did a movie, I probably won't watch it because I'm almost certain to find it eh.
And
he just
picks
movies that don't.
Sully was like that.
His taste in scripts don't match my taste in movies. Like Jake Gyllenhaal is the opposite. Jake Gyllenhaal is one of my favorite actors. And if he's in a movie, I'm going to watch it because it's probably a good movie.
Well, and that said, I'm going to segue into my non-big screen movies of the year. So streaming stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw
Let me get my theatricals out of the way before yeah.
Sure.
I agree with you about Mission Impossible Fallout. That is an excellent action film. It was an excellent espionage film. Really tense moments in that movie. A lot of unpredictable stuff. And I think this is
having
a movie
his wife
where
show up at the end
really,
there.
Yeah, we can really safely say with this movie that this franchise is now on a par with the James Bond franchise at its best. I think this movie really hit that level.
Yes.
This is the best film in the series by far, and it is right up there with Daniel Craig Bond's, which I consider to be some of the best in that franchise. Craig's
well,
my favorite
and
Bond,
especially
and,
with yeah,
you know.
oh, he's my favorite Bond too. I only reason why I kind of worry is that Tom Hanks is now 57, and he broke his leg on this movie. So I mean, there's only so many more
You
stunts
mean
you can do,
Tom
Tom.
Cruise? You mean Tom
Tom Cruise?
Cruise.
Sorry, did I say Tom Hanks? I'm sorry. Yeah,
Yeah.
Tom Cruise.
Well, he may have to.
He's getting up. He's Jackie Chan started stopped doing his stunts when he turned 60, and Tom is almost there.
Yeah.
So we might get another good.
Tom's
going to
have
movies out of him before.
He's going to have to. He's going to have to back off of this doing his own stunts. But Tom Cruise is another actor. I almost invariably like all of his movies. Every time he makes a movie, I almost always like it. And he's one of my favorite actors,
well, I mean,
too. I love Tom Cruise.
He started the Jack Reacher stuff, and I really liked the first one. The second one was
mm-hmm.
pretty good out of the series. I was kind of hoping he'd do a third one, and we'll see if that actually happens. I know it's kind of in the works, but we're not quite there. What other movies did you want to put in your top 10, or at least your movies you liked this year?
I agree with you about Deadpool 2. Deadpool 2 was brilliant. I love the Brad Pitt cameo as the Vanisher.
Yes.
That was fantastic. Yeah, I like Deadpool 2 a lot. Ryan Reynolds is really cool. He's a lot cooler actor than some people want to give him credit for. But yeah, I like Deadpool too. You mentioned musical movies. I have to say that Bohemian Rhapsody is my favorite musical theme movie from this past year. Bohemian Rhapsody blew
yeah.
me away. That performance, oh my
Was it
goodness.
Rami? What's his last?
Rami Malek, I think, something like that.
Yeah, Rami Malek. Yeah.
Let me look.
Yeah, I loved him in Bad.
Yeah.
Was it the iRobot series? And to see him able to sing and perform like that, I mean, it was up there on my list. It's just I Queen was not my biggest band growing up, but as I've gotten older, I've kind of had more of an appreciation for them. So
I
enjoyed that movie too.
I thought it was interesting that it was a Bryan Singer film, because it's not really the kind of movie I would expect out of Bryan Singer. You know, he did
or...
Superman. What was the movie, the sequel he made to the Christopher Reeve film? It was technically part Superman Returns. It was technically the last film in the
mm-hmm.
Christopher Reeve franchise. He did that. He did
right.
some of the X-Men movies. You know, he did what was it? That movie that everyone loves. Didn't like nearly as much as everybody else. Kevin Spacey was in it. The Usual Suspects. You know that's Bryan Singer. This surprised me.
Usual Suspects. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great.
Singer has. I think this movie kind of hit all the not. It's a hit or miss movie for a lot of people, but it does. I will give you the music was top notch. I mean, you can't beat Queen's.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that was actually Freddie Mercury's vocals. They didn't try to get him to do it. It wasn't like Jim Morrison actually singing. This was, you know, there's no way you could have anybody but Freddie Mercury on those
right.
vocals.
I mean,
but recording of Bohemian Rhapsody. Do what?
Right. I was going to say that, you know, it's kind of hard to have a 4-octave voice. There's only one.
Yeah.
You can do that kind of stuff. You know, that's kind of out there. What else did you have any more left on your list?
Yeah, I'm getting close to the end of it. I like Disaster Artist. I really enjoyed watching that movie. That was the one James Franco made it. He played he played Tommy Wiseau. Who has a movie coming out called Big Shark that I want to see? Because oh my God, they're gonna make he's gonna make a worse movie than The Asylum. I'm kind of an Asylum nerd. I love the Sharknado movies. I like Asylum disaster films. We won't go into it. It's guilty pleasure thing. Okay. You also mentioned Black Klansman. I really, really, really liked Black Klansman. Easily one of the best films of the year. I like Spike Lee. Malcolm X is one of my favorite movies. You know, that's my favorite Spike Lee film, but this is right up there. Black Klansman was great. And Adam Driver, and I can't think of the main actor. Oh my goodness. Cause I knew who Adam Driver was. So he's Kylo Ren. Look that up. Yeah, that was a brilliant film. That is among Spike Lee's best work. Absolutely.
Well, I put it right next to Bamboozled, which was one of my favorite Spike Lee movie anyway.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah. that's probably, I think it's, it, it, I walked out. That's one of those movies you walk out completely blown away by what he's saying. And I think the same thing happened with Black
Okay.
Klansman. I mean, you walk out going, wow, they really did change the world in that whole story. Yes.
John David Washington played Ron Stallworth. But that's a great movie. Now, I want to springboard off that. You mentioned this one in conjunction with Black Panther. I don't think Black Panther was great. I don't think it was that good of a movie. I don't think I know I'm like the lone voice of dissent here. I think part of the reason the movie is so popular now as a superhero film, just as a superhero film, leaving ethnic politics out of it, I don't think it's that exceptional. I don't think it stands out. It's kind of slow, really. It's not that engaging. Great character. I don't think the story was that good. Now, having said that, I do understand that it's nice that Black culture has actually got its own, like, look really awesome. You know, it's no longer just a bunch of white guys in capes now. There's, you know, actually like a really badass black superhero. I get that, but I think we've let the politicization. You know what I'm saying? I think we've let the politics of this movie get in the way of discussion of how good the movie, the film itself is outside of that. I think it's a mediocre picture. Yay that we have this character. That's awesome. I think it's a mediocre picture. I like the Wakanda stuff and the Black Panther stuff a lot better in Infinity War.
Well, I think that partly because, well, you had a springboard. I think there's some really good planks in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as far as springboard movies. They pushed the entire story on. I think the first Ant-Man movie was like that. It pushed the story. The Black Panther was. Even Doctor Strange. All those movies kind of were putting the puzzle pieces in play so you could crack the whole thing in a place. And
right.
That's why I kind of give them credit for doing a lot of really good stuff in that movie that no one else would have ever done outside of that
and
world.
And I acknowledge that I'm a minority. I'm the only person I've heard say this about. Well, not one other person I know said the same thing. They didn't like it either. But generally, I know I'm a lone dissenter here. I just didn't find that engaging. Good movie.
Well,
not
it fits the category. I understand. That's why I kind of put it. I'm kind of on the. I wasn't sure if I'd include it or not in my 10, but I put Black Klansman kind of a little bit over it. That's
right.
Why I think when you look at the whole entirety of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I wonder, 25, 30 years from now, are they going to even look at those as individual one-off movies, or are they going to be just chapters?
It kind of is. It really is a series at this point. It's one single franchise.
Right, because they pushed everyone together,
it.
And. That's why the DC doesn't do that yet. They tried it with Justice League, and it kind of
worked. I've heard they've kind of backed off, and they're sticking more to just individual one-off films and sequels sequels to those films and stuff.
Wonder Woman got $1.9 billion in revenues, and so they kind of going, okay, we can make them separate.
Better franchises.
Speaking of Fred, I wanted to ask you if you've seen speaking of Marvel Cinematic, how Daredevil and the Punisher have kind of crossed into that category as far as streaming. Yeah,
yeah,
I've watched
those,
all
those are
all
canceled
episodes.
Now too. Marvel's canceled the last. Marvel's
Both.
Canceled the last of its TV shows.
Punisher's right.
Gone.
I mean, they the Punisher's gone, and the second season of the Punisher was incredible. I mean, I'll give them credit. They did a really, really good job.
I've never been
at,
a big Punisher fan.
Well, I mean. They made a movie back in the early 2000s. It was really good, but it doesn't. The Punisher doesn't fit in the category because there's a lot of death. Daredevil, a little bit, was riding the coattails of the actors and not necessarily the storyline. That's why I don't think it really kind of took off. Same with Luke Cage and a couple of other MCU stuff on TV, like they've been kind of more secondary characters, and that's why I think a lot of the superhero stuff gets lost in translations because you can do too much and have too much to go over.
Yeah. Agreed.
Speaking of streaming, do you have more on your top 10 that we haven't covered?
Yeah, I've got one more on my, one more on my top 10 and one more to gripe about. Liked Mandy. I liked Mandy.
Oh, wow.
But see, I like Panos Cosmatos. I like him because he also did, Beyond the Black Rainbow. That movie, I've said this before. Okay. You see movies where the filmmaker tries to depict what it's like to be on a hallucinogen, and you're like, this guy has clearly never done anything stronger than aspirin. Panos Cosmatos knows what he's doing. That movie is an hour and a half horror film and acid trip. Take it from a psychonaut. That movie feels legit, but it's also insanely brilliant. I don't know. I mean, that movie, you just have to see that film. There's no describing that movie to anybody. And it's Nicolas Cage at his insane best. I mean, this is like one of his great whack job performances. There's a scene where he just snaps. There's no music or anything. It's just him losing his shit.
And well, that made me wonder, does this movie fit the category of suspense or thriller or revenge or horror? It just
horror,
kind of, that had
action.
A lot of, yeah,
horror,
and you
action.
Know,
very surreal.
But see, and this is where I loved the John Wick first movie, and I liked the second one. I'm getting kind of tired of the protagonist walking through dead body after dead body, shooting them, chopping them in half, cutting them up. I'm getting kind of
different.
Old.
I mean, it is
true.
The, like, you know, it is the video game boss to boss progression thing, sure, but the tone here is just vastly different. And really, this harkens back more to the old exploitation revenge films, more so than the kind of revenge films like John Wick. This, you know, this Panos Cosmatos is a huge fan of classic horror, and this movie is set in the 80s. It's got little in jokes in there. This guy is a horror fan metalhead. I mean, you know, and obviously clearly a psychonaut. No way this guy has not done acid and things like that. I promise you he has. You know, but anyway, I love Mandy. It's a good Nicolas Cage film. You know, he does one really great movie for every 10 shit films, and this is one of his really great movies.
Well, I will give you that. Yes, he does. All right, well, and I lost count of how many times I had people have to try to explain the movie to me after I watched it, because it does
Which
have
one?
That kind of twist of Mandy. I haven't explained.
Yeah.
So it when the majority of people have to walk out of the movie going, huh? What was that
well,
again?
Because there is some nonlinear stuff in the movie. There is some stuff in there that's deliberately ambiguous. I mean, like that closing shot of the multiple, you know, moons in the sky. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? And that,
yeah.
I think
what
that's where. What does it mean? Where the movies? I felt it was more because the guy's his reality had fractured, and so he was seeing more than one thing.
Could be. Could
you know,
be.
And that's
but
why
I think he also.
I felt this.
Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing. I mean,
no.
On a different note, you have the same thing happening with, I guess if you want to go back to Infinity Wars, Tony Stark's reality is fractured so bad at the end of the movie, and he's barely alive after fighting Thanos, and all of his friends are pretty much dead. You kind of wonder where they're going with it. And granted, we have another movie to find out. But
supposed to be three-hour film so far, they're saying.
Another three hours, wow. Well, and that's why I when you see the extended cut of to both Two Towers and Return of the King, you see all the stuff that was kind of put that Peter Jackson took out of those movies. You kind of go, okay, that makes a little bit more sense. I wonder if this movie, if Mandy suffered from some editing issues that caused everyone kind of go, huh, at the end. But then at the same time, it felt you don't.
His previous film is similar. This is the kind of filmmaker he is.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. This was not a studio interference issue. This was Panos Cosmatos makes opaque films.
Well, I felt that, you know, whenever I'm sitting in the movie theater and I hear people around me asking the people they're with, what is that? What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or, what was that again? Or what is it? Did you understand what's going on? That's either a good thing or an extremely bad thing. And I walked out of that movie kind of not knowing where I was. And I think it was a good. I think for the most part it was a good thing. I have tried to tone down some of my more gory movies in the last few years, just because I'm kind of getting tired of the blood and guts part.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, as a whole, the movie did work.
Well, and it really showed some restraint, because it could have been a lot more of a gore movie than it was. If you think about it, as violent a film as it was, it wasn't just a constant, you know, deluge of body parts either.
Right.
You know, this is coming from someone who's seen a lot gorier films than Mandy. Mandy, for a more mainstream viewer, probably seems a little gorier.
I think we've had this conversation a long time ago.
Yeah,
it's not a grindhouse movie per se, but it is close.
Well, no, I would say it's not Grindhouse, but I'm saying it's not a gore film per se.
No, it's not.
It has gore in it, but it's not a gore
shock
film. Right.
Right.
Right. It's not a shock film. Okay, and then the only thing I have left is a quick gripe. The reason you praise Solo is one of the reasons I didn't like it. I felt like I was watching boxes being checked. Yep, there's your explanation for that. There's explanation for that. There's explanation for that. Plus, it was a drab movie. Star Wars Pictures should not be drab. This was a drab film. I didn't find it that engaging. I did not think that the guy they cast at all captured the essence of Han Solo. That did not at any point in that film feel like I was watching Han Solo. I was very disappointed in that film. And I kind of was expecting to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Because it's Ron Howard. Oh. I don't like Ron Howard.
It's Ron Howard.
Mediocre pictures. That's what he does.
Well,
I knew as soon as they said he was taking the picture, I was like, it's over. It's done. And I was still disappointed. Even going in knowing it was a Ron Howard film, I was still disappointed.
Well,
okay.
Tell me if you think that this movie should have been termed Lando and done more of a backstory on Lando Calrissian.
That would have made more sense because it wasn't a good Solo picture.
Well, I felt that while they did check all the boxes on getting all the main stuff, there are things I still wanted to know. I would like to have seen why Solo got kicked out of the Imperial Academy. I would have liked to have seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to have seen more interaction with Chewie and Han becoming who they were, not just kind of like this is their first time together, you know? Fine.
Yeah,
and
the
backstory
was flat.
Even
for archetypal cardboard characters, it was flat, at least on them. Woody Harrelson was great.
True.
Lando was great.
Oh.
Solo and Chewie?
Yeah. Chewie is Chewie. I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to go and understand what's going on. But that's why I'm wondering if the Lando movie will actually come about. And I'm kind of more interested now in the TV stuff that Disney's planning for Star Wars, for The Mandalorian and the new animated series. Now the Clone Wars is gone and the Rebels is over. I don't know what the new one's called, but I think they've decided to let's finally put all the old stories and all the old people to the side and move on with something new. And I'm looking forward to that quite a bit.
That
leads me to.
Anyway, they're saturating me on this. They really are. I'm like dying for Quentin Tarantino's Star Trek to come out. That's what I'm chopping in the bit for. I'm losing interest in Star Wars. But anyway,
I was going to segue to the streaming movies that we didn't get to cover really. And I think that's why.
Right.
Speaking of John Krasinski, John Krasinski. I messed up his name. The Tom Clancy, Jack Ryan series that on Amazon, that to me was perfect. I mean, I'm a huge Tom Clancy fan anyway.
The casting surprised me, but at the same time, it looks like it would work. I'm not a Tom Clancy fan, so I haven't watched it, but it looked like it was a pretty good fit.
Well, it's like to try to do a spy movie nowadays, you run afoul of both the Mission Impossible and the James Bond series. You have to kind of like find your, and if you want to get even more, you know, where do you find yourself in that area? And Jack Ryan is truly a good series. It's got some great stuff to it. Speaking of great series, I mean, we talk about Punisher and Daredevil. That's why I wanted to touch on another one that's on YouTube only, Cobra Kai. I'm a huge Karate Kid fan from the 80s. Man, that was a big part of my growing up. And watching Daniel LaRusso come back to life on the screen, even though it was on a YouTube screen, was still fun to watch. I will give them a lot of credit for that.
I've heard that's a good show. Didn't they retcon it where like it turns out that he wasn't as bad a guy as he seemed to be in the movie?
Right, exactly. By the second movie, he kind of came up. Well, because, you know, even at the end of the movie, he came up and he said, "You're a good guy, LaRusso, you're a good guy." And, you know, Johnny wasn't the bad guy that he really was. He's just kind of playing the part. And that's why when you talk about playing parts, that's where you start getting into The Expanse. Now, I'm a huge fan of the series, of the book series. But watching it's really good, hard sci-fi and getting into where we would be in 150 years when it comes to, true life science fiction and becoming true life, and how would the world look in 100 years when it talks about, you know, how would Mars react, how would the belters react, and all that stuff. I don't know if you've watched any of The Expanse, but they got some really good. It's not, put it this way, it's not sci-fi for just the special effects. It's got some really good characterizations and some good story arcs.
Right.
I think that's pretty much it for my movies for 2018.
All right. Well, I guess we have reached the end of our belated discussion of 2018, because I really should have had this discussion a month. Oh, no, we haven't. That's right. The reason I waited, because I was deliberately waiting until I got a chance to see the remake of Suspiria, which I finally got a chance to watch. Now, I don't, you know who Dario Argento is? I know you're not
Yes,
really an
and that's
Italian horror fanatic than I am, but I figured you probably, if nothing else, from hearing me prattle. Okay, well, they remade the film. They remade the movie. Dario Argento got remade, which for me is just is beyond surreal, because I remember when, like, nobody knew who Dario Argento was except for other people that read Fangoria and Gorzo magazine, you know. Luca Guadagnino, Guadagnino, directed this. It's the same basic premise as the original, but it's an entirely different picture. It's 2.5 hours long.
Whoa.
It's got a totally different color palette, totally different style, and it stars is Tilda Swinton. It's also got Chloe Grace
Oh,
Moretz and
wow.
Dakota Johnson. Yeah, it is an amazing art house horror picture. It's just, and at the end of the movie, I am not entirely sure what happened. I have to go back and watch it again, but all I know is it was mesmerizing and it haunts me.
I haven't seen it, but I've
It
watched
is a
the
great
previews and read
film.
some reviews. And
Man, it's
I
good.
remember the original one, Argento. Yeah, it's not coming back to me that when I did see that. It's been a long time ago when I saw that.
Yeah.
They made the movie for $20 million. I mean, it goes to show you that you can do really awesome movies, but not on with like, you know, throwing $100 million at it just to get a good movie, you know.
Well,
But
one
Tilda
of the things that
Swinton, I
really
mean,
got me
she
in the,
as
yeah.
I was gonna say
Yes.
Tilda Swinton. I'll just on that alone makes me want to see the movie now.
Oh, she's great. This is like one of my favorite Tilda Swinton roles. She's a fantastic actress. And one thing I want to know, I don't know how they did it. There's, you know, this is set in a dance academy. One of the
Sure.
rooms is a room that's nothing but mirrors on all sides. And I just, that scene, me and the friend of mine that watched it with me, we're just like, how in the fuck did they pull that off where you can't see the camera? And I'm like, there's
Oh,
some
yeah.
CGI happening that is so well done, I don't notice it. Yeah, because that whole room was mirrors, and that several major scenes happen in that room, and it's shown from all angles. I mean, the movie goes out of its
Wow.
way to, like, swoop the camera around, and it's like, I dare you to figure out how we did it.
Well, you know that's that whole Matrix, like flinging the camera around in places that you don't get to see. And I think that's how you can see how some movies influence others
Right.
as far as special effects. But
Right.
that's why I'm kind of curious to see how they did this, because I mean, as more of a morbid curiosity on my end, I mean, I've been forced to watch, sitting next to my wife and daughter, multiple Netflix dance drama shows, Dance Moms and Dance. So to see this on a different perspective kind of makes me want to watch it just for that angle alone. But
Yeah, wouldn't you
to
love to see
see
this as a
Argento's
double feature
movies
with
move,
Fame?
watch Fame first and then Suspiria.
Yeah.
Because that would be a great contrast of themes.
It would. It would. Are both dance films?
They both are, and you got or Billy Elliot. There you go. There's another one.
Or
Well,
they shoot
you got
horses, don't
the
they?
they shoot horses, don't they? Oh
It's
man.
based on an old noir novel. It had Jane Fonda in it. It was about, you know, those old the dance contests they had back in the 20s, where people, whoever was the last couple standing, it
Right.
revolved around that culture.
Oh my gosh. Well,
Dark
that was a really
stuff.
good
It was
episode
based
of
on
The
an old
Waltons as
noir.
well. Well,
Oh, yeah,
that's
there you
why
go.
I, when you try to compare the themes and you, but it's in the same category as far as being a dance movie, you know, that's when you start wondering who's the more esoteric or who's the more weird of the two, when you look at something that's supposed to be held up as plain, and then you have the alternative version of it, and then when you start comparing the two, you go, wait a minute, these guys are kind of more a lot more alike than they are dissimilar.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'll one of my favorite quotes to pull out, because I've said it a lot on the show, is what Roger Ebert has said about movies one time. It's not what a movie is about, but how it's about it.
Yeah, you can say that how the movie's made, the interpretation of it. I mean, Star Wars: A New Hope, as it was when Lucas cut it, was a piece of trash. He had stuff so out of sequence and so messed up, and that's why his wife at the time, when she cut the movie, that's why she got the Academy Award, because she turned that hunk of junk into something what it was actually turned into, which is a really good movie, using techniques that was
And that and that had some really
how the movie
innovative
is.
camera work in that, or editing work, sorry.
Exactly. But where you it's more about how that movie is showing the movie instead of just what the movie's about. Because what the movie was about was just to rip off of Kurosawa. So what we're trying to figure out, I showed that there's a great YouTube video about that shows the clips of how Lucas originally cut the movie, and how it ended up being on the after his wife got a hold of it. And there's so many movies out there that both suffer, but also there's other movies that are made much better by just the editing alone, or just the production
Right.
level, if you want to put it that way. That's why I kind of think
Right.
is if you go sit down, if you can slog through the entire Lord of the Rings series, the 27
No thanks.
hour epic Peter Jackson dream,
Nope.
maybe you might actually say it, maybe if you're a fan of the book, and go, yeah, maybe all the stuff he cut out, he didn't really cut out, he made it, just didn't put couldn't put it into a 2 hour movie.
Yeah. Sometimes
And
you have
that's
to
why
compress when
that's
you're
where
changing media, yeah.
well, that might even be a completely another episode of
Oh,
books,
definitely.
or they could be turned into movies, or movie turned into books, or whichever, how you want to turn it, and how there's some that fit
Adaptation,
the
yeah.
category of that are perfect, that are great, and then there's some that just kind of Ready Player
Yeah.
One the story until you're like, because I'm a huge fan of the book Holes, and when I saw the movie, I kind of went, wow, they did a really, really good job at transferring this over to a movie. And
Okay,
then you look at the
I'm a big
credits of
fan
the
of the,
screenplay,
yeah.
and it's the author of the
And
book who wrote the
I'm a big
book.
fan of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I couldn't even finish the adaptation, the movie of that. I liked the BBC miniseries in the 80s, but did not like the movie. I couldn't finish the film. Couldn't do it.
Well, I finished it in protest. So I did
All right.
about a dozen movies this last year that kind of finished that way. Finished
Well,
it in
I
protest
appreciate your
just to
being
say,
on the
okay, I sat
show,
through it. Yes,
because
sir.
with Phoebe and Nicodemus gone, I would have been talking about movies all by myself, and you brought some stuff up and saw some stuff that I have not been able to see yet, and some that I probably won't get around to. But glad to have you on. I'll definitely have you back again soon. Meanwhile, just keep an eye on Facebook, and you'll find out soon enough what our next topic is going to be, and we'll be hearing back from Dale at some point in the near future. Thanks again,
Good
Dale.
deal.
Good night, everybody.
All right.